96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to The Essentials, The Reset. I am your host, Hubert Edwards, and I'm back in studio. It's been a while. It's been a while since we have had the opportunity to have this conversation. I think you have been hearing a couple of replays. But here we are this evening, live and direct in the studio, Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. And as usual, we want to continue the conversation. We want to get to a place where we are moving the national conversations in a direction which enables us to explore and understand the issues that impact and affect us, whether it is nationally, regionally, or globally. And so what is it that you have on your plate today? What have you been doing over the last while, since the last time I was here? Well, I have had some shows. All have been done from done remotely. I've not been in the studio for quite a while. It kind of look a little bit different, but pretty much the same. But we want to hear from you this evening, because this evening we are going to kick off a series, if you will. As you're aware, most people would be aware. If you are not, I'm not sure where you have been. But the Bahamas is slowly creeping towards that 50th anniversary celebration of independence. And we have given this some thought and asked ourselves, okay, yes, we will be celebrating independence on July 10th. That will be the 50th anniversary. And so all of the things that we will be celebrating are things which have already pretty much crystallized. Only about a month and a half or so left to go before that particular date crystallizes. So there's not much unless something seriously comes out of left field which is worthy of great celebration. I think most of it has already crystallized. So we will be celebrating those things, all historical aspects, cultural aspect. We'll be looking at national life, where we have been, how far the country have come. But I think there is another important aspect to contemplate. Beyond 50, the road beyond 50. Because that is, in my mind, where the important aspect is going to be. And I'm not a party pooper. I don't want to be someone who is going to spoil the fun, but I'm simply focusing on what's next. After the celebration, after the lights, after the music, after everything has died down, what's next? And so I want to invite you to share with us. This evening, we're kicking off, setting the tone, and we want to hear from the listeners. The numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Our text line is 422-4796. Call us. Let's have a reason. You can take your time. You'll have lots of time to speak with me if you call in this evening. What's on your mind? What are your reflections about the march to independence? So since the last time we spoke, there's a lot of things which have happened, and there's been a big upsurge in crime. There's a big upsurge in incidents of rape. The king has been crowned. Taxation is again on the front burner. A huge number of national issues which have been discussed. And we hear them daily on the talk shows. Persons have been delving into them, so we don't need to reinvent that wheel. But we want to focus tonight on the celebration, on hearing a little bit about where the country has come from. I don't know. You will have to teach me this evening. I don't know the history, as you are aware if you listen to me regularly. I'm a transplant, so I have an appreciation of a couple of things, but I would love to hear from you in your voice. And then we can focus on, I may have one or two questions for you as it relates to what's next. So the road beyond 50. So we look forward to having that conversation. We look forward to hearing and sharing with you on the essentials. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back on the other side, I'm going to start to lay out my views, general views, mainly questions, as it relates to the road beyond 50. But before I do that, before I take the break, I just want to give a shout out to some young people. All of them are generally younger persons than myself. So they're all young people. I have had the opportunity to spend some time over the last 9 months or so in an institution where persons are seeking to pursue career. So in a way, I'm making some sort of a change and looking at a new career of sorts. But it has been a very wonderful experience. It has been a very difficult experience, in many instances a challenging experience, but at the end of the day, a very rewarding one. And I'm going to be very, very cautious because, you know, we had exams. Exam results are not out yet, but so no time for celebration. Can't get to that place. Have to stay moderate. But somewhere along the line, somehow I made the decision that I could be a student at Eugene Depuge Law School. And I did. I went. They accepted me. I'm not questioning them. They took me. And so I've spent the last 9 months with a group. I think it's about 50 or 51. And then if you count the persons who are in the second years, another 40 plus. But a wonderful group of young individuals. A lot of learning, a lot of training, a lot of working together. Just a wonderful, wonderful experience for an individual like myself who has been to a number of schools, but I can easily and unequivocally say this has been the hardest program I've ever experienced in my life. And that, I think, speaks volumes. It ought to be hard, I understand. But I've never experienced anything this... this robust. Extremely robust. And so we want to give a shout out to all of the fellow students at EDLS Eugene Depuge Law School, who have just completed their exams for the first year, and those who are in second year who have completed their exam and looking to transition out, and certainly the teachers, the lecturers, the administration, staff, everyone there. It has been a great experience, you know, and if my experience was to come to an end today, and I didn't get a chance to transition to year two, which I hope I will, I certainly would leave with great, great memories. Some nightmares here and there because, yeah, there were rough moments, but certainly that is a center of excellence right here in the Bahamas to be celebrated, and I am happy that I have the chance, the opportunity, the privilege to be a small part of that. And so we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I told them in a group that I was going to shout them out. So big shout out to all of you, all the EDLS students, year one, year two, all the teachers, lecturers, administrative staff. One love. Let's take a break here. When we come back, we get into the road beyond 50.
Next Level Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance, and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions. Practical solutions delivered.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Back as we listen to Landlord and Luciano Landlord, a fellow radio show host right here on Guardian Radio, and a colleague, a friend, an individual who is doing some great things in the country and internationally. So we want to give a shout out. But I thought that that song was kind of appropriate for the time that we are in right now, right here. The fact of the matter is we have seen instances where there's been flare-ups of crime and violence. And sometimes we have listened to the conversations, to the arguments, to the discussions, to the debate, and, you know, they take on sometimes a slightly sharper edge than they ought to, especially as we get into the celebratory mode of celebrating 50 years of independence. And so let's have peace and love, because those two things will propel us much further than when we do otherwise. So my question to you is, having gone through the independence celebration, which will be culminating, or there may be some celebrations after, but certainly July 10th, 2023, will represent 50 years of independence, 50 years of self-determination. Of course, there was internal self-government or governance before. We had the instance of what's referred to as majority rule, where most of the persons who were from the African diaspora, the black people, took over the leadership represent the majority of those who held leadership position at the highest level within the country, the prime minister, as ministers of government, as cabinet ministers, as leaders of social organization. And so we have gravitated from that point, I think that was 1967, to 1973. 1973 came independence, where the country unshackled itself slightly from the monarchy by saying, we now have full self-determination. We will make decisions about our national life as we see fit. And so the individuals within the country were no longer considered to be subjects of England, but were full-fledged Bohemians, authorized, empowered, and entrenched in the Constitution of 1973, the ability, the right, the privilege to be Bohemians. Because before then, we're just persons living in the back, some other country. So from 1973 to today, 2023, 50 years, the country has grown, it has developed, created institutions. It has refused to fail in areas where persons had prognosticated that it would fail. It has refused to fail in areas where persons would have declared back in 1973 or prior to 1973 that the leaders, especially the black leaders, were incapable of running the country. Looking back, we can connect the dots. We know that they were wrong. If we were around then, we would have told them that they were wrong, you know, just because I would say it. And while it is by no stretch of the imagination to say that the country is yet to live up to its potential, I think persons will agree. And if you don't agree, we could agree to disagree and use it as a working argument. But it is my belief, all things considered, from an economic, from a cultural point of view, educationally, healthcare-wise, just a development of the social cohesive fabric of the nation, that the Bahamas has done extremely well, but has not in any way, shape, or form yet approached its true potential. And you may think that that in and of itself is a criticism. I would rather look at it from the point of view that it represents and delineates opportunity. Yes, one would want to be in a position which says the country did great, the country did well. But having regard for where we are, whatever the measurement you want to use, I think you ought to be open, clearly open, and satisfied with the fact that where we are today, every single thing considered, everything taken into consideration, it's a better conclusion to say that we are yet to achieve our full potential. Because if the opposite was true, you'd be in trouble, yeah? So the Bahamas has done yeoman work, has stand out as a beacon within the Caribbean region, though some will argue that the Bahamas is not a part of the Caribbean. I beg to differ. The Caribbean really and truly, in some respect, is not purely physical. But it has stood out as a beacon within the Caribbean and in many ways a beacon within the Western Hemisphere in terms of its level and standard of living, the prosperity which it has afforded many, 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 many of its citizens. Unfortunately, there are way too many which have not yet tasted that level of prosperity, even though they live in and amongst and betwixt these incidents, some sustainable, some not, of prosperity. Many persons have yet to have their appetite wet and satiated as far as that is concerned. A bad thing, but also a good thing, because it represents potential for the future. So the country has distinguished itself with great scholars. It has distinguished itself by having some of the best professionals in all walks of life, all professional endeavor, from doctor to lawyer to captains of ship to boat makers to individuals who do carpentry, plumbing, all across the board, teachers. Any professional endeavor that you can think of, the Bahamas have individuals who are distinguished in those areas and others who are holding their own in a significant way and helping the country to move forward. And it yet have others who have not lived up to their potential. Bad thing, but good, because if we were to step to the fore and enhance that potential, then it says that the country have greater capacity, greater means of growing. So on the education front, the Bahamas have done well. I think the Bahamas has two Rhodes Scholar to its name for a country of this size. That is significant. That is significant. The Bahamas has citizens, individuals who are associated with a country that has had international repute in sports, in the arts, in film, in medicine, all over the place. Young people who are working at NASA, who are making a mark on the world, persons who are leading major organizations. Fred Perpall, for example, who is leading the Gulf Association in the United States. Distinguished individuals. And so in that regard, the country has done well. But still, there are many, many, many areas of improvement. And I think the Honorable Minister, Glenys Anna Martin, would be the first to say to you, yes, there have been great gains, but we are not satisfied with the state of education in the country. And we readily embrace that type of an outlook. You listen to her in many instances. I personally find the way she goes about these discussions has been very refreshing. No excuses, not lowering the standard, but always admitting that, yes, there's more work to be done. In the area of healthcare, this week we saw the breaking of ground for a campus, health campus in Freeport. Not quite sure what a health campus represents, if it is going to be the construction of the hospital, which has been promised over a number of years, or is something different. But in the area of healthcare, the Bahamas has done well enough, but right now, I believe that its health facilities, its health capacity, its health infrastructure within the country is less than it ought to be for a country as prosperous as it is. Princess Margaret Hospital, I think, is in need of upgrades. There have been some work done, but there's still greater need. We have heard discussion across the board that there is a need for another hospital right here on New Providence. The RAND in Freeport needs to be upgraded, and I'm assuming that the groundbreaking of this week or last week is targeted in that direction. One of the things which I've observed, and I'm not at a point yet where I say it's a good or a bad thing. I'm not sure. But there are some positives. Post-COVID, there's been a significant visible. Maybe they were there before. I don't know. But there has been a visible expansion of healthcare facilities. These walk-in type clinics, the Oak Trees and the other places that you see a number of, average buildings being renovated into, splendid looking infrastructure and are now providing healthcare. I think if this is a trend which is going to crystallize and provide service at a world standard level, it's going to be a huge positive, because I know from observation, or my conclusion from observation is that a significant portion of the country's wealth goes to South Florida for healthcare. If that portion of spend can be domesticated, quote unquote, domesticated, more of that spend here and stay here with Bahamian professionals, as long as they're providing healthcare at the standard which is equal to or surpassing what is available elsewhere, then that augurs well for the country. Potentially, as a spin-off, one of the areas which have always been discussed is health tourism. And with the preponderance of new facilities and obviously expanding facilities, facilities which are bringing in upper class equipment, so on and so forth, I think it becomes a little bit more possible for us to see greater expansion in that arena. So education and health done reasonably well, not anywhere near where we would like it to be, but there is potential, certainly in the healthcare arena. What about the economics? Yes, the economics are chugging right along. We would have seen over the last short while a massive, massive rollback of the losses that would have been taken across two major incidents, Dorian and the pandemic. Totally rollback. I don't know if it's 100% back there, but I would dare to say if it is not fully 100%, it's like 99.99999, something like that. Very, very close. So we have had that rollback. And then the question now is, how are we going to move forward? What is it that we're going to do going forward? How are we going to grow further? How are we going to be transformative? How are we going to ensure that the metrics which have been laid out in the fiscal strategy report, where the government has indicated that it needs to get GDP, wants to grow GDP up to $16 billion and to see government revenue expand to $4 billion, how are we going to get there? That target is post 50th celebration. And that is one of the most important, as you know, I know if you listen to us here on The Essentials, we go hard and sometimes we go often at the economics of the country because it is important. It's kind of the single most important driver of the well-being, a big determinant of the state of affairs, the quality of life enjoyed, standard of living enjoyed by individuals within the country. So where are we going? Where are we going to be after this fiscal has come to an end? Interestingly, the fiscal year 2022-23 come to an end, bam, on the end of June. And by the time we get around to July 10, we are now into 2023-24. The budget would have already been read and we would have a view, a reasonable view of what 2022-23 has done and the extent to which we need to perform in the following year. But this year, I think, is kind of unique. And it's unique in the sense that the government has really already foreshadowed in its fiscal strategy report exactly what it needs to do. It needs to grow the economy over the next 3 years or so by about 4 to 5%. Done. That's it. Everything else which comes after that is details. 4 to 5% over the next 2 to 3 years. Tall order. What does the road beyond 50 look like for us in that regard? And then we have some issues around human rights. This my coining. So we had recently rulings on citizenship and the ability of fathers, Bahamian fathers, to pass on their citizenship to children had with females who are not Bahamians. As we get into the 50th year celebration, I believe that this is such an important issue, citizenship, the sanctity of citizenship, the sacredness of citizenship, the importance of citizenship, the ability for individual to express their personal sovereignty in that I, as a man, have the ability to express myself with a woman. And in that expression, a human child comes forth, and my ability to pass on my citizenship to that child should be ensured. And that's kind of what the ruling was. The ruling basically said we were misinterpreting the Constitution over the last short while. Section 6, which says parents pass on their citizenship. As long as you're a Bahamian parent, you pass on your citizenship, was being interpreted using Section 14, I think Section 14.1, where the language shifted from parents to father and mother. And that was used to interpret and limit and adjust one of the articles of the Constitution, largely, I think, because it was seeking to interpret this very ancient, very, very ancient, and a concept which I think should just go away and die once and for all. But this concept of a child of no father, a child of no father, old ancient English concept where if you were a bastard, you would struggle. And a lot of this discussion, a lot of it, while persons may appreciate it or may accept or not accept it, is really built around this whole concept of being legitimate. Back in the days, legitimacy of a child, that is a child who is the product of a married man and woman, was significant. Because if you were born out of wedlock, you were just like you're in exile. You weren't treated differently. You couldn't inherit anything from the father. You were referred to as a bastard. And while laws have been passed to address that in general terms, I think it's still embraced in the Constitution. It's there. And that should go. It should absolutely go, because the moment it does, it takes away the differentiation between a married man and an unmarried man, a married woman and an unmarried woman. I absolutely don't believe, and I stand firmly on this, I do not believe that two individuals who make a decision to get married, being citizens, should have any greater rights than an individual who decide to cohabit and not get married. It's absolutely, absolutely an unequivocal breach. Not that this was intended in the beginning. The Constitution was highly influenced by the times and what prevailed at that time. But today, in 2023, it's very, very easy to argue that that state of affairs is discriminatory. Now, persons will argue from a purist point of view that the Constitution cannot discriminate. And I understand the argument. I readily understand where you would be coming from with that. But there are aspects of the Constitution today, as we move in to celebrate 50 years of independence, in an era where constitutional and the natural laws are given great prominence, where international laws are being, quote unquote, imposed on countries in the interpretation of their laws, in the interpretation of their constitution. When we in 2023 and a man cannot readily pass on his citizenship to his children, I think we need to take a good look at that as we approach 50 years. When a woman, because she's married to a foreign man and they have children outside of the Bahamas, cannot pass on her citizenship to her child, I think we need to look at that because there are some human rights matters to be considered. When an unmarried man who has a child outside of the Bahamas cannot pass on his citizenship to that child, I think we need to take a look at that, especially as we get to 50 years. 50 years in 2023 is different from 50 years in 1903. The communication was different. Information moved slower. The awareness across the population would have been different. The level of knowledge and understanding of issues dealing with human rights, of issues dealing with international law, of issues with dealing with the understanding the rights and the privileges of individuals would have been totally different in today's world. Even when you refuse to, almost by osmosis, you are informed, you become aware. There's just so many sources. So we no longer, we ought not to use "we only 50" as an excuse. No? I think we need to start having the conversation of how we embrace this idea of giving full-fledged appreciation, full-fledged entrenchment of the rights to pass on citizenship. And I know that there are some things out there which scare some people. And I don't want to be flippant in any way because you may think that it is me saying it because I'm a little bit different. So I don't want to be flippant. I respect everyone's position. But there's some people who literally and simply need to walk away from some hardcore beliefs because those hardcore beliefs are hurting some other people in a big way. In 2023, as we approach the 50th year of independence, and I'm going to just say this and leave and move forward to the next thing, a woman in a married relationship ought to have the protection of the law if she's convinced and if on objective analysis of evidence that she has been raped by her husband, she should have the protection of the law. And she should have at least have the satisfaction of knowing that he receives due punishment for his act. So the road beyond 50 must take these things into consideration, must rethink human rights, must rethink where the country wants to be in light of what's happening on in the global arena. It's not enough to play well in certain aspects of an international or a global world when we don't in other aspects. And I know you can make the argument that, you know, the Bahamas is not unique in this regard, but the Bahamas is the country that we are focusing on. The Bahamas is a country that we celebrate, and the Bahamas, I think, is a country that ought to, through the leadership, through those who have great influence, make some of the wrongs, obvious wrongs, right, because they're easy to fix, absolutely easy to fix. Well, not if you have to touch the Constitution, and not if after the questions have been framed, they become political. That becomes a little bit challenging. But all else being equal, they're not so difficult to fix. Not so difficult to fix. So on the human rights front, I believe that the Bahamas does pretty well. There are entrenched rights, Bill of Rights, entrenched in the Constitution. There are laws which provide protection for individuals. For persons who feel that they have been wronged, they can make their way to the courts, and the courts will provide solutions, will provide remedies where those wrongs have been proven to be so. So the Bahamas does well, generally speaking. But there are some areas which need to be looked at. Administratively, there are some other areas which the Bahamas, from time to time, drop the ball on, especially as it relates to sometimes the treatment of migrants. Unfortunately, while in the process of dealing with those persons as they ought to be dealt with, sometimes the ball is dropped. Sometimes they are locked up for too long. Sometimes a little bit of ill treatment here or there. That being the case, as we move forward beyond 50 years, these are some of the things which must take greater prominence. And I'm not saying this to criticize. I'm not saying this to down the country in any way, shape, or form. I'm saying this from a point of view that there has to be a next level. And that next level must encompass all that is good, all that is great, all that expresses the full potential and the full capacity of the country. And in 2023, the way the world is working, it's not just about economics. It's not just about those who are citizens. It's about everybody, everyone, being fair, being equitable. And so we look forward to how that will shift in the beyond 50. And then there are some issues, I believe, around poverty or individuals who are not making, I would think, the level of progress which is commensurate with the performance of the country or commensurate with its potential. Or at least the portion of the potential which has been expressed so far. And so as we move into this 50th year anniversary and look beyond that, I believe that government largely, now we have to shift the government because they are in a position to cause things to change through policy decision. But government, I think, has to take another look at how persons who are being pushed to the periphery of society economically and otherwise, individuals who have missed their first chance, missed their second chance, and maybe at the risk of missing their third chance, individuals who, as a result of generational disenfranchisement or generational challenges, find themselves in circumstances where they just really can't get up and going. You know, we like to tell people to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. But there's some persons without boots, much less straps. And so careful attention must be placed on these individuals, where they are, and I know that there are many things out there. You have small business development, you have social service doing work, you have the venture capital fund. There are many programs out there. The point I make is simply that they're not enough. And in some instances, to corral some of the problems which are evident, those institutions are not best suited. Some of the programs which may be well suited and may be well aligned in concept may be not as effective as they ought to be. And so I believe that there is some work which needs to be done in that era. And if the focus is on there, and the focus is not simply, hey, we are just going to, you know, take resources and throw at these individuals. It's an investment. I'm talking about it from an investment with a view of unleashing, of uncapping the potential that the Bahamas represents. Because if you think about it, if a small slice of society continuously thrives, if a small slice of society continuously grows, continuously develop wealth, continuously advance, and another larger slice is maybe moving at a much slower pace, and then some of them are absolutely not moving any at all, they represent untapped potential, unexploited potential, exploit in a good way, unleveraged potential. And so when we ask ourselves, you know, where is the Bahamas going to find growth from? How is the Bahamas going to find development? We have to also look at the potential within the people. Yes, there's land and there's capital, but we also have to look at the people who are going to become better owners, greater owners, have their house, have their land, get into business. Still, some of them will be workers, some of them will be artisans. Whatsoever it is that they wish to do in life, not categorizing and say one era is better. Some people made the argument that we need more entrepreneurs, yada, yada, yada. I'm not going down that road this evening. I'm saying whatsoever these individuals wish to be, productive albeit, and we have to nudge them in a productive direction when they choose not to see that. But once they're seeking to be that, we have to, as a country, that needs to be facilitated at a greater level. And the argument I make today is that as one of the most prosperous country within the region, maybe the most prosperous country within the region, there are just simply way too many persons living at or below the margin within the Bahamas for it to be able to fully unleash what it is capable of. And that's a perspective from which that must be looked at as we get into year 51 and start to move into the place where the country has to grow in transformative ways. I will come back to that particular sentiment on the other side of this break. You're listening to The Essentials, The Reset. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards, and we're just having a conversation, setting the tone, whetting the appetite. Because as of next week going forward, I'll be joined by individuals, captains of industries, from the religious arena, from the sporting arena. Obviously, we want to get persons from the education arena, financial services. We want to have captain of industries. We want to find individuals who were there in the early days. And we're going to do this all the way up to July 10th or close thereto. We're going to talk about the country in clear, honest terms, no partisan anything, no shade, no nothing like that. Very clear terms. How far has the country come? How much the country has achieved? And what might be the outlook? What might be the wish? What might be the ambition for the point after the 50th celebration. You listen to The Essentials. Don't move. Come right back.
God, some call themselves, but they don't want to mix up with no one else. Oh, boy. So caught up in the religious beliefs until their true love they start to cease.
When faced with an illness like cancer, we band together, and we at Cleveland Clinic in Florida have your back. From advanced cancer treatments to extra safety measures at all of our locations, we're with you on this journey. For every infusion and follow-up, for every step of the way, for every care in the world, Cleveland Clinic in Florida. Get the care you need when and where you need it. To learn more or connect with a local representative, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
Next Level Solutions. Next Level Solutions. Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance, and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions. Practical solutions delivered.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
This morning I woke up and I look in the mirror and every part of my body was in place. Many people died and never saw this day. So another day I live, I appreciate. Don't ever wanna act too high and mighty, cause tomorrow I can fall down on my face. So in everything, Lord, I give you praise. And that puts a smile on my face. Lord, I thank you for sunshine, thank you for rain, thank you for joy, thank you for pain. It's a beautiful day, beautiful day, it's a beautiful day, yeah. Don't fuss and fight, let us unite, we got one life, so let's go. It's a beautiful day, yeah, it's a beautiful day. Up the shadows of death, I will fear no evil, won't be dismayed when I see the clock ticking away and things are not in place. Everything in life happens for a reason. Disappointment comes with a lesson. It's for me to get wiser, got to work harder. In the end, it will get better. Lord, I thank you for sunshine. Thank you for rain, thank you for joy, thank you for pain, it's a beautiful day.
It's a time to be thankful, it's a time to be thankful. 50 years on the trot. The Bahamas has, sometimes persons forget, was only not too long ago where certain persons could not go to certain places. It was not too long ago where the majority of the population were living ordinary experiences, ordinary existence. So a lot has been achieved, like some other countries, a bit older than the Bahamas in terms of being independent. But a lot has been achieved in 50 years. The critique in many of us would say, well, more could have been achieved. And I think that is the truth. When one considered, for the time that I have been in this country and been paying attention to government and governance, looking at public bodies, their operation, more could have been accomplished. much more in many instances. But that's not a reason for not celebrating the great things, the achievements in sports, the achievements in arts, the achievement in, well, it's still sports, but the achievement in sailing. I want to give a shout out to young Craig Ferguson comes to mind. Of course, you have individuals like Shawnee Miller, the achievement in baseball, basketball. Recently, the beach soccer team came so close, so close. So there have been many, many, many things to celebrate. Great, great things, great achievement, great moments of national significance. But there's still some ways to go. In my mind, the Bahamas is a sleeping giant. There are individuals, and I can understand that, and I respect the fact that you are more emotionally connected in many instances than I might be, but there are many persons who believe that the Bahamas should remain this nice, idyllic, especially in some of the family islands. I see the Bahamas slightly differently. While not moving to an extreme of industrialization, if you will, for want of a better word, I see a shift to the middle, which unleashes an economic juggernaut across the region. A Bahamas where there is greater export, greater production, not a great over the existing over-reliance on tourism. So tourism will be the same, it will grow, but as a proportion of its contribution to GDP, it reduces. That's the type of potential I think is right here, where Andras becomes a greater contributor to the breadbasket of the region or the country, where farmers become a greater supplier to the tourism product, where this perennial discussion of only 20 cents of every dollar remain here changes to 40 cents and 50 cents and maybe even 60 cents. Where the perennial discussion of Bahamians do not own big major hotels changes. An environment where individuals who have transplanted and become a part of the community of the Bahamas feel more empowered, are facilitated to grow, to develop, to expand themselves, and thereby helping the country to expand even further, where the mixed cultures which are resident in the Bahamas, which is absolutely, absolutely one of the most unique melting pot in the Caribbean, is seen as an asset, not a humbug, not a obstacle, not something to be berated, but as an asset to be leveraged, to be infused into a tourism product, which would be unmatched across the region. Me dreaming a little bit. It's possible. It's going to be different. But it's something which simply cannot be replicated by any other country in the region if it was a decision made. And it's one that can be and should be made in such a way where there isn't in any way, shape, or form a diminishing of the Bahamian-ness of the offering, but an addition and a complementary stance which draws on and attracts and maybe enhances and further help to sustain the existing mainstream product. These are just things for thought. But as we get into 50, I really believe that 50 is a milestone, a benchmark, a line in the sand which says, as a country, we are big enough, we are matured enough, we are open enough, we have sufficient awareness to look at things objectively, to look beyond the ordinary, to look beyond the usual, to kind of parse our way through sometimes the narratives which are not productive, which are not advancing, which are not uplifting. And to make some decisions which are going to propel the country forward in a very serious way. So those are maybe, it's a bit of a wish list for me, but those are some of the things which I think are possible if we were able to bring the collective genius, the collective mind of the Bahamas with a view of recognizing that the potential is not yet by any means tapped out. There's way, way more to go, but it needs to be actively worked in order for that to happen. And that leads me into the era where I believe a lot of work has been done over the last 50 years. Certainly when you look at where the country was prior to majority rule, it would be easy to conclude that social cohesiveness was not optimized, was not optimal. Certainly within the largely two communities which existed at the time, you know, they may have been cohesive over there and there may be some level of cohesion over here, but as an entity, as a single entity, there was a lack of social cohesion. That has improved significantly over the years, without doubt. But of course, the Bahamas being the Bahamas and facing some of the unique challenges that it has, especially with illegal migration, migration from other places, because of its level of prosperity and the infusion of many cultures, persons coming to work, there's still active work that needs to be done. And here's the way I look at things. Some persons will argue when it comes so let's deal with migration and persons coming in. Right off the top, I can say to you, if 100 person comes into the country, at least 2 is going to stay. I am one such example. Persons are going to stay. And I think it behooves the country, given the preponderance of different cultures that come into it. It's not like a Jamaica or a Barbados where, you know, maybe larger, well, Barbados is not that much larger, but Jamaica certainly with a larger population. But you don't have the same level of migrant population coming into, say, Jamaica or going into Trinidad. People do go there and they have their issues with persons coming from Venezuela and so on and so forth. But because of the mix, the eclectic mix, I think attention must be placed on, you know, is there social cohesion? Is there a means of ensuring that, you know, everyone kind of get along? But some things cannot just be left to chance. Because what you could find or what you could end up having is a circumstance where the country works very hard, the leadership, the government works very hard, put policies in place which benefits the citizenry generally, and then you have those individuals who come and stay and are legitimized in staying, find themselves at the periphery and then become a pull, a drag on that infrastructure, the social infrastructure, and consequently the gains which have been made largely around the citizenry is now being eroded by others. legitimate people. I'm not talking about individuals who are here in any illegal fashion. I'm talking about persons who have a right to be here and who are here and impact the infrastructure like that. So they can't be ignored. So as we get to 50, social cohesion, I think, is a factor which must be given very careful consideration. Housing. The Bahamas has a housing problem. It's a significant housing problem. Housing is expensive. Land is expensive and the price is growing. Affordable, and it's a term of art, because what represents affordable housing, we don't know. Affordable to who? We know that there are demographics within the Bahamas where if you were to make a house $50,000, that would be the value. There are persons who can't buy it. So where exactly is affordable housing? The economy, the cost of the general cost of living pushes that price point to a level which eludes a large portion and will continue to do so. So the question is, how do you fix that? How do you get to the place where you have a great stock of housing such that year after year after year, you don't find the possibility of home ownership migrating away from individuals? Now, everyone don't have to own a house. Persons can live and rent, but as long as it's affordable. So some attention will have to be placed on that. And I think the government, and successive government, has recognized that. This current administration is doing some significant works in the Family Island in terms of providing housing. And so kudos to them. But I think that there is more to be done. You know, I really don't think I would find a lot of persons who would disagree with me on that point. But this is important. It is important from the perspective that housing stock is not too low, which therefore means that you won't have a circumstance where there is a overly significant demand for housing, which then pushes the ability to own, to afford, out of the reach of too many people. Because that hurts the country in the long run. After all, it's through the ownership of usually land, starting with a lot for a house and owning a house, where many families start to create wealth for the next generation. And that needs to stay firmly within reach of individuals. So as we contemplate 50 years, like I said, there are many, many things to celebrate. There are many, many people who can celebrate, you know, the rich people, millionaire, multi-millionaire. But the question is, what about everybody else? The persons who live in 300,000 and 500,000 and 700,000 and $1 million house, and persons who live in multi-million dollar house, 10, 15, 20, $25 million house. But what about the individual who cannot afford a house, even if it was $50,000? We have to start thinking. And there need to be creative solutions brought to bear. One of the most important things, I believe, is that when the country fixes its growth side, its productive side, its development side, that affords individuals the opportunity to grow, more persons to be educated, more persons to be professionalized, I'm making that one up, to become experts in their chosen field and therefore become productive. In instances where you have families, where individuals have not, you know, maybe gone off to college or gotten trained at a tertiary level, you have one or two persons out of those families breaking through and changing the trajectory of those family structures. Consideration have to be given to that. So there's the economic side and then there's the social side. And I believe that when you get to the level of 50 years, those things must take on greater significant focus. At the start of this administration, the Prime Minister, the Honorable Brave Davis, Philip Brave Davis, spoke very often about economic dignity. And it's an idea, it's a concept which really added, it captured my attention. And I went away and I did my research and I was saying, you know, did he come up with this all by himself? And I found out it was something which is written about. There's a book out there, and there may be other books. But there's this guy, I can't remember his name at this point in time, but he served under Obama and I think Clinton, a Democrat, progressive. And he writes about economic dignity as a means of advancing the humanity or the human asset of a country. And basically, in a nutshell, it boils down to persons should be able to work with dignity, earn sufficient to live in a dignified way so they can afford healthcare, they can afford housing, they can afford schooling and education, and whatsoever they need to live. Maybe moderate, ordinary life, but dignified life. And if they find themselves on the margin, or if they find themselves in certain groups like they're disabled, if they find themselves without the ability to ambulate, they would be able to do so with the help of equipment. And they would be able to integrate based on their mental capacity as ordinary individuals. So they can go around and they can work in any organization because they can get up the stairs, or not the stairs, but they can get into the building and they can get into elevators and they don't have to be bothered by stairs. It's a whole comprehensive set of thinking, which I believe kind of went away from the Prime Minister's discussion too early. I have not heard it for a while. Certainly, maybe in this coming budget presentation, it will again rear its head. But I believe that the Prime Minister was on a good pitch, because the focus from what I gleaned in my studies on economic dignity was looking at marginalized persons, was looking at individuals who were vulnerable, was always keeping at the front of your mind, how do we grow? How do we develop? How do we do the big things? How do we make the rich man richer? And at the same time, providing effectively for the marginalized individual. And that, I believe, is a good thing. Anyone who would not embrace that type of a thinking, maybe, you know, have a problem with humanity itself. So I believe that the discussion went away too quickly. In some instances, based on my reading and going back and looking at some of the speeches, you know, maybe the speechwriter leaned a little bit to the left or a little bit to the right, or gave a little bit, maybe too much consideration to the Bahamian context, and it kind of lost some of its edge. But it was there. It was there. It was there. One of the last time I heard that came out in very clear relief, at least started to come out in very clear relief, was the presentation the Prime Minister gave at UB when he spoke about the National Development Plan. And he gave us a kind of walk through history. And the intention, I believe, was to say, look, you know, we have done all of these things and we have grown, and we have advanced economically, but it was not enough because it didn't benefit all. That's where he got maybe about 90% of the way there, but somewhere in between the last 10%, the speech writers or he came off script. I don't know what happened there, but somewhere in the last 10%, the local politics flowed in and kind of obscure the ultimate destination, which would have driven that home. But I believe as we celebrate this 50th anniversary, it will do the country well for someone to be championing that again. And I don't think there's anyone better than the Prime Minister to do so, given his background. As a matter of fact, the Prime Minister and the Deputy Prime Minister are two unique individuals, I think, based on their background, based on their humble beginnings, based on where they can easily demonstrate. You know, sometimes some persons tell you, well, we've come from far and we've struggled and we didn't have it. But, you know, you have to be kind of brushing your hair and rubbing it to really, really understand and appreciate how true that is. These two individuals can easily demonstrate that. I think as a country, it's accepted that they are who they are, who they say they are. And consequently, they're uniquely placed to drive that. And they have some time yet before the next election, certainly. And they may still have some time after the next election. I'm not getting into that aspect of it. I am saying that economic dignity needs to find itself kind of back on the front plate, at least in the discussion. Because it starts with a narrative. It starts with a discussion. And then eventually, it may catch fire. And so some of those things that we need to focus on. I touched on the Prime Minister and the Deputy Prime Minister, so I think this is a good segue for the next 2 minutes or so to talk about this particular aspect as we get into the 50th year. I know that philosophically, politically, there are divides within the country. I understand the competitiveness of that particular arrangement. My position to anyone who would listen to me or who wishes to believe me, and if you don't want to believe me, that's fine. But anyone who would care to hear, my position is that as we sit and as we speak today, the administration, the PLP, Progressive Liberal Party administration, which is currently in, it can only be one administration at a time by one party. The one that is currently in, regardless of the fact that you as an individual may have a view that come the next election, you may want them out. But as they are seated today, they must, absolutely must be successful. Must. And every administration that comes after this, whether the PLP returns or the FNM, every administration after this must, for at least the next two administrations, maybe we can take a break then and have a bad year or two off. But every administration, I would believe, over the next 3 to 10, 15 years, must be successful. And the reason for that is simple. It takes us back to the economics of the situation, of the circumstance of the country. If we get to the end of this five-year cycle, where we are staring down national debt of 13 plus heading to $14 billion, where we have not achieved the $16 billion expansion of the economy and government revenue is moving commensurate with national growth and development, we're going to be in trouble. Point blank, simple as that. Now, you can have your own view. That's my position. And as we speak with individuals, hopefully we will get some of the persons from government. I certainly would love to have a conversation with the Prime Minister. I certainly would love to have a conversation with the Deputy Prime Minister, with the Minister of Economic Affairs, and other persons, or the Captain of Industry, to discuss the road beyond 50. a discussion with the financial secretary. Because when one listens to what is being said, there's a lot to be heard. But if you also take the time to listen to what is not being said, there's even more to be heard. So I say to you, and this is my position, I'm not trying to convince anyone to do anything. I'm simply saying to you, based on my assessment from where I sit, it is critically, fundamentally important that this administration wins. Not win. I shouldn't use the word win because that may suggest an election. That this administration is successful in meeting the target set. Doing well. Because the foundation needs to be laid for the next 10, 15 years. And if we miss that, we're going to be in trouble. We have a caller on the line. Caller, you're on Guardian Radio. This is The Essential. Go ahead.
This is Mr. Thompson.
Hi, Mr. Thompson.
I'd like to ask you a question. What about the Constitution with a police officer going into a hotel and making a criminal cases without the regards of the PLP? What does the Constitution say about that?
I don't know if I fully understand your question.
Okay. What I mean is this.
Uh-huh.
The definition for a security is property and life. All of the property is the security's problem, and the people on the property is the security's problem. What I mean is, if the police has to deal with some situation, could they go in without the regards of the security? What does the Constitution says
okay.
about that?
Okay, I think generally, thank you so much for your call. I think generally speaking, the police have a right to, by law, to go anywhere once there is a reason to do so, once there is reasonable suspicion that something has happened or there is a report that something has actually taken place, which might be contrary to the laws. That's their job. They will go anywhere and any place unless they are restricted from doing so by some legislation or maybe diplomatic immunity restriction. Beyond that, I don't think there is a limitation on where they can go or there should be a limitation on where they can go. So thank you so much for your call. We don't have a lot of time. So we'll take ourselves the last break, and when we come back, we will put a cap on this. We're talking about the 50th anniversary celebration and the road beyond 50. You're listening to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. This is The Essentials. Don't move. Come right back.
When faced with an illness like cancer, we band together. And we at Cleveland Clinic in Florida have your back. From advanced cancer treatments to extra safety measures at all of our locations, we're with you on this journey. For every infusion and follow-up, for every step of the way, for every care in the world, Cleveland Clinic in Florida. Get the care you need when and where you need it. To learn more or connect with a local representative, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
When faced with an illness like cancer, we band together. And we at Cleveland Clinic in Florida have your back. From advanced cancer treatments to extra safety measures at all of our locations, we're with you on this journey. For every infusion and follow-up, for every step of the way, for every care in the world. Cleveland Clinic in Florida. Get the care you need when and where you need it. To learn more or connect with a local representative, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
Sad to live, so many did before me. the best. Not going to live my life like the rest. I'm not settling. I deserve the best. Absolutely no opinion, no contest. I'm not settling. I deserve the best. Not going
to. Welcome to The Essentials, as Ricardo Clark sing, I'm not settling, and certainly you should not either. The country shouldn't settle for less than the best, and certainly there is a big challenge in the road ahead. You know, it's not going to be easy going forward. The targets that I just spoke of, they are significant. They won't come very easily. There's a lot of work to be done, but we have to push. We have to push in that direction. Before I come to you, caller, let me get these two texts out of the way. This text says, it's an interesting proposition. I support every administration succeeding with the financial goals because that advances the country. We should all have the country first in our minds, regardless of the party in power. And I couldn't have said it better. That's exactly the point. At this point in time, once the election has settled, it's about country. And it's a country first, country second, country third. Because at the end of the day, there's a failure to reach the targets, a failure to be successful carries a cost with it. Caller, you're on Guardian Radio, The Essentials. Go right ahead.
Yeah.
Hello?
Same point. If the police could go in and do what they want to do, then what is the reason for the security officers being there?
Okay, thank you so much. Security officers are civilians. Security officers are civilians. And I know usually the police will, I would think the police goes in on a scene and their security officers, they're not just going to bull past them. They're not going to do that. There will be conversation, but one must understand and appreciate that at the end of the day, the police has a job to do. The police have a constitution to uphold, laws to uphold. They are empowered and they work under the auspices of the commissioner of police. And the security guards, if they're there, they're civilians. And they will have to take a backbench to the efforts of the police, any way, shape, or form. I think that is simply the answer. A couple of other things to touch on as we wind this down, as I indicated already, that the administration must win. Losing will be very costly. It will prove challenging going forward. It's not going to be easy, but we must do so. The fiscal and economic strategies going forward must be transformative. We should not be settling for circumstance where we have a great comeback. Yes, we had a great comeback, but now we need to get into a stream where we are seeing greater growth, greater development. So the activities when we move forward, as we move forward, we want to have a circumstance. We don't want to have a circumstance where we have a lot of activity without commensurate development. And these are my words, the status quo must die. The status quo need to die. Too often we see an overly concentration of success. It's kind of always the same groups. It's kind of always the same people. It's kind of always individuals who are attached or associated with the same demographic that are again and again overly successful, over and above sometimes. We have to start thinking about how to diversify the success, how to spread that out wider. And that is what I mean when I say the status quo needs to die, or at least it needs to become much less dominant than it is at this moment. And it ties right back into the argument I made earlier about paying attention to economic dignity. Because the fact that success and achievement and growth is so concentrated, it means that there are many other individuals who are missing a chance, missing an opportunity to become better, to grow, to develop. And so when you start to make that linkage and to make that connection, it makes the same argument that we tried to do earlier of paying attention to the economic dignity. So as the country grows, as the country develops, as the country progresses economically, so too is a wider swath of individuals, of citizens within the country. They are feeling it. They are growing. They are moving in tandem with the growth and development of the country. And then we must see a different level of national narrative. We need to get to the place where there's greater openness, greater accountability, greater transparency. I think sometimes we do a good enough job and we kind of settle for that and say, maybe we are doing a good enough job, or maybe we're doing a better job than the other persons who were there before, but that cannot be good enough. Transparency must be absolutely transparent. Accountability must be to the ultimate level that it can be. And openness must be something which is in motion. It's a living, breathing organism. It has to be. Because when that doesn't happen, we kind of take away some of the edge. We kind of take away some of the idealism. That has become a buzzword these days. Some of the idealism which has been preached but doesn't get lived out on a consistent basis. So the fight for economic dignity and the fight for the expansion, the upliftment, the growth and development of all citizens across the board, I think has to be the focus for the road beyond 50. And that comes with national growth and development, focus on social cohesion, and paying attention to the economic dignity, the economic growth, the economic development of all citizens of the Bahamas. We're going to leave it there tonight, and all that's left to say is where we usually end. Do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. The Bahamas is a great country. The Bahamas has greater potential, greater ways to go, and we must all fight. We must all work together, administration, citizens, and residents alike, to ensure that that full potential is leveraged and unleashed for the greater good of all. You listen to The Essentials. Good night.
I've been here all day of my life. Works good and queer, I'm the old with my sight. Some will share, others do as they like. Some, you flesh them watch here with them fork and knife. Some don't care, their heart is like ice. After killing under them retires, but I'm holding firm. Every man deserves to earn. Jaja come a plan with success. Holding firm. Every man deserves to earn. You won't think I'm in the mess. You say I'm rude. It's an
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.